Welcome. You are listening to The Creative Spark. My name is G. Brian Benson, and I'm an award-winning author, project coach, actor, TEDx speaker, creative, and four-time Ironman triathlete. I love to creatively inspire and be inspired. And with each episode, I will be talking of authors, athletes, entrepreneurs, artists, and actors sharing their journey of success and learning how to find the joy and peace of mind that comes with stepping into one's own skin and going beyond anything they might previously have thought possible. I hope that their stories and strategies provide insight, tools, and empowerment to step up your creative game and help you live your best life. So without further ado, let's get going. Imagine being just 7 years old and accidentally watching the horror classic Night of the Living Dead. For my next guest, that's precisely what happened. It became the catalyst for a life-altering path forward. After a week of sleepless nights, he became fascinated with the idea that he could be so scared, yet be perfectly safe. And at his mom's suggestion, he put pen to paper and has been creating horror and science fiction tales ever since. My next guest, Brian Fitzpatrick, is an award-winning author, screenwriter, paranormal investigator, and speaker. Welcome, Brian.
Hey, thanks for having me. That was quite an intro.
Hey, you're welcome. it's awesome to have you. And you know, we're just getting to know each other, and I know we have some mutual friends, and thought you'd be perfect for this show with all the different facets of creativity that you splay out into the world. So
I am very happy to be here.
Good. So it's pretty obvious that you have enjoyed science fiction for most of your life. What were some of the your other influences as a child that maybe come into play with your writing?
I'll tell you, my parents were highly inappropriate, and I saw way too many way too many movies I should not have seen at like 7, 8, 9.
Early HBO, you know,
exactly, and theaters too. And just after Night of the Living Dead, that was such a landmark situation for me because I was terrified for a very long time afterwards. And then it got to me like, well, I was safe, and yet I was so scared. And so I would begin like seeking out horror movies and seeking out some of the more intense sci-fi. Like, I mean, I was a young age when like Alien came out, mm-hmm. and then John Carpenter's The Thing. And those were very influential on me. As well as, you know, of course, I was 9 years old when Star Wars New Hope came out. So, you know, 9 year old Brian was all into all the Star Wars movies and all the Spielbergs and everything like that.
Yeah.
With books, it was a lot of Clive Barker, Stephen King, later on Anne Rice, just a lot of horror stuff. just awful.
I read a little bit of Stephen King, not a whole lot, more of his short stories. And you ever read any Ray Bradbury of his short stories?
I did back in the day. Yeah. Like, okay. Something Wicked This Becomes is not, I mean, a little longer, a little more like a novella, but yeah, some of his stories are out there.
Yeah. I mean, there's science fiction, and there's also a little bit, some scarier stuff. I mean, he kind of runs the gamut, but I really enjoyed, his short story collection anthology. But, so this is kind of fascinating. I know we're going to kind of unwrap it, but in 2017, you converted your most popular screenplay, Mechcraft, into a novel that was published in 2018 and received with really great reviews and ratings. First of all, tell us a little bit about the story. And I've heard it's, a little bit described as a cross between The Matrix and Harry Potter.
Yeah, one of my early critics dubbed it that. I was like, I'm going to steal that and use it everywhere I go.
It's great. I mean, it's perfect.
Because I mean, melding those two ideas, I'm like, yeah, I'll take that. So yeah, Mechcraft is a science fiction thriller with maybe a few elements of horror because I just can't escape that. But it's it started off as sort of a YA idea, but it really is.
I was going to ask
for
you
all ages. Yeah, okay. My target originally was that, but as the story developed, it became more just adult. It's basically a sci-fi set in modern day LA, where there's a secret society of three factions of gifted people who have this nanotechnology embedded in their DNA, where it's a sentient basically a liquid robot is the way I can, convey it. Mm-hmm. And they can, at their command, summon it from their skin into our world and make this stuff into any shape or weapon or tool that they desire. So think of like the liquid Terminator in Terminator 2, how he looked. Yeah. Think of that coming out of someone's hand and then them creating a weapon or a tool with it. And that was the catalyst for it. And the story centers around a kid, a 15-year-old kid named Jake, mm-hmm. who discovers he's the first ever born with this technology already embedded in his DNA. Everybody else in this secret societies had to undergo scientific injections and experiments and a rigorous, painful process to get this ability. But both his parents had that same process, and they were one of the original scientists. And so being him being born from them, mm-hmm. he already had it in his DNA. And that sends these factions into a frenzy because they've been at war with each other for 20 years. They figure that he might have unique abilities that nobody else has that he can do with his Metcraft power. And of course he does. And so he becomes the unwitting linchpin in these faction wars. And of course there's a maniacal, relentless villain who is desperate to control him.
Wow. So I'm sure there's lots of great chases and just narrow escapes, et cetera, et cetera.
It is very action centric. I couldn't help myself. The first one is. The other two are the second one does more of a deep dive in emotions, and the third one wraps it up in a crazy, epic way.
Now, you did all three of these in a short period of time. I mean, and it actually kind of was by accident in the first place, right?
Yeah, I'm mostly a screenwriter. I never intended to write novels. And mm-hmm. when Metcraft kept placing quarterfinals in contest after contest,
Screenwriting contests.
Yes. I would get meetings and talk to agents, and everyone liked it and some loved it. But I got the same answer every time. It was, well, you know what? This is an awfully expensive endeavor, and we're not ready to risk that much money on an unknown franchise.
Because of the budget that it would take to make it, right?
Yeah. It'll be such an expensive, all the special effects involved.
Yeah.
So I kept getting no's, but keep at it, kid. They kind of had that attitude. So a buddy of mine who's in the industry was like, well, you know, why don't, if they want the IP to be, you know, famous, why don't you just convert it to a novel and build a fan base? And then those same agents and prodcos and studios will come to you. Mm. And I was like, no, don't tell me that. Cause I just yelled so long honing that script. And so after I wiped away my tears and, banged my head against the wall, I understood he was right. And so I converted it to a novel and found a publisher in 2018 who published it, and it did pretty well. But it wasn't getting me where I wanted to go with it. And mm-hmm. then COVID hits in early 2020, February, things were locked down. And I said, well, I'm going to take this time to write the sequels. I knew with the first one done, not getting me where I wanted to be, I knew I needed to finish the three, and I had all three mapped out. So I knew I wanted to eventually write them as intentionally as screenplays, but I figured, well, the first novel was doing pretty good. So let me write them as books. And somewhere along the lines, I got a new publisher who not only wanted to publish the sequel, they also wanted to re-release the first one. And so I got the rights back to it. And they on May 4th of 2021, they released both Metcraft and Metcraft Disruption. And it's been doing really well.
That's awesome.
But the timing on this is really interesting because our interview here, because Thursday, the final book,
Metcraft I noticed Cataclysm, that. Yeah.
Metcraft Cataclysm is launching on Thursday,
hoorah!
November 4th. And that was a crazy story because, like you said, it came about quickly. Metcraft took me about 8 months to convert from screenplay to novel and all the revisions and drafts. Disruption
which is still pretty fast.
It is not bad. I felt because I had so much of it mapped out, it really was fairly quick. Mm-hmm. Disruption took 7 months. thanks to my rock star editor. I have a professional editor that I use myself, and she just nailed it. Mm. So that really helped move it along. But in January of 2021, my new publisher hit me up and said, you know, we've got a sudden opening for November publication. If you have a third book to give us. And I said, well, I've got the notes. I've got an outline, but nothing written. And this was the second week of January. And he said, well, if you can get it to us by March 1st, we will publish it in November. So I'm thinking, oh my God, 6 weeks, 6-7 weeks to write an entire novel and drafts. And like an idiot, I said, yes. But I had some weeks of vacation built up from work and I took them. And my wife, being awesomely supportive, cleared our calendar, cleared our schedule. And I literally just ate, slept, and drank writing. I wrote, you know, extensively, like 10 hours, 14 hours, 16 hour days, sometimes longer. I did a couple of 23 hour marathons. It was just insane. And I do not recommend it, but I had enough time to finish. This is the longest book. It's the longest book of the three.
Of course it is.
And I had time to, of course. And I had time to get it to the editor. She cleared her table, did it for me, got it back to me. And I had time to do a quick second edit before sending it to the publisher. And I got it to them on midnight, March 1st.
More power to you. That's unbelievable.
It took about a week to recover health-wise.
Oh, I can't imagine. I mean, I had to kind of, nothing like that, but I had about 3.5 months to get a book, it's a nonfiction self-help book, but I mean, it was still pretty long and to my publisher, and I just kind of locked myself up too. Not as much as you did.
it's
a little stressful, but it's also kind of exciting.
It is. I think deadlines have a way of just kicking us in the ass and kind of pushing us along, or they destroy us. I'm not sure which.
You survived.
Oh, how did you find the process?
It was fine. It was good. I felt like it was nice because I do so many different things that sometimes I get lost in all of them. And sometimes that will kind of hold me back from like doing anything a little bit. And so having this specific purpose of doing that in the next 3.5 months kind of felt nice and gave me kind of a weird relief in some respects, even though it was going to be a lot of work. And
I can see that. Especially if you've got multiple distractions, having that deadline looming, it kind of forces you to narrow that vision down to what you need to do.
Yeah, I kind of put acting on hold for a little bit, auditions, and I put a few other things on hold, and I just kind of focused on that. And it was good because I think, you know, if you try to do a lot of stuff, which I have, it just, there's this, I can handle it most of the time, but yet there's also this kind of underlying level of anxiety going through me always, even though it's kind of at a subconscious level and I'm not always aware of it, but it's there and it tires you out. And you know, this is not about me, but I mean, this last year and a half, I've been kind of on a little bit of a transition and letting go of some things. And it's helped me just kind of relax a little bit more. And, you know,
it's kind of like a rebirth.
Exactly. You know, and I know that you went through one yourself, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And you know, we have a lot of similarities with the writing and this other experience we'll talk about in a sec. But I want to ask you, as far as converting it from a screenplay to a novel, that's backwards. Most of the time, it's the other way around, right?
Right.
Was it harder that way?
Here's the funny thing. I thought when I first decided to do it, I thought, oh, this will be easy. I've got this 114 page script. I just got to, you know, get in their heads a little bit and change things around. It'll be cakewalk. No, it killed. It was so agonizing because first you had to change everything to the tense you're going to write it in the book. I went for third person. Mm-hmm. And then you can't just, you know, with the screenplay, you're limited to, you can only write what an audience can see, which is great. It's an interesting challenge.
Right.
But with a novel, you get into their heads and there's so much more to it. And at first I was like, this is hard. But then something clicked and I was like, wait, I can actually talk about what they're thinking. And so it became this wonderful exploration of, you know, the villain, Sasha, she is insane. And now I can kind of dive into why she's insane. And it just became a joy. And I ended up adding a whole bunch of, I added 3 or 4 chapters that were not involved in the screenplay, added some new characters, and it became much more fleshed out.
Cool.
In fact, I'm thinking about redoing the script to match the book more.
Really?
Because I think the book ended up being far better.
Well, go for it.
Once I find the time.
Right. Speaking of Sasha, I know that there was something kind of fun happened to you. Industrial rock band, Chemical Straitjacket. They reached out to you and wanted to write a song about her.
Yes, it was really first.
I listened to it. It's really good.
It's crazy, isn't it? It's a trip. Yeah. But yeah, this band, they'd been around. I had not heard of them because they're New Jersey based and done a lot of local stuff. But they had toured with a lot of bands that I was into, so I kind of on the periphery kind of heard of them. And so when they reached out to me, the lead singer songwriter Kevin, and was like, "Dude, I really like your story. The whole band loves your story, and if you give us permission, we'd like to do a song." Like, what? I mean, how many books, how many stories get a song about them unless you're Lord of the Rings?
Right.
So I said, of course. And they kind of even involved me in the songwriting process with a couple lines of the song.
Oh, wow.
Which was very flattering. That I mean, I told them, I am not a songwriter. You will regret this. But they were more than generous. And they worked on it and gave me the rough cuts. And the rough cuts were rough, but they still sounded awesome. And then in February 12th of this year, they released their third studio album. And Tendril and Blade is the name of the song. It is the album opener. And I was just completely flattered and honored that they did this. It was really awesome. In fact, they had John Bechtel, which is the keyboard player for Ministry. He was their producer for the album. So it was kind of a big time leap for them.
That's awesome.
So that yeah. I'm proud to say that song has over 10,000 listens on Spotify. So
that's cool. I checked it out earlier today. It's fun.
It's very industrial.
Yeah, I mean, I could listen to that stuff all the time, but like, there's so many layers to it too, and in different speeds, and it's very clever.
I will say, I really like the bass line.
Yes, like when the right in the middle. Begins. Right. Okay. Yes, and then like. Here we're not digressing a little bit,
but yeah, we're going off track.
Well, but I mean, right in the middle, like where it kind of stops for a second, then it starts kicking in again and stuff, and it was just kind of, it changes directions a little bit. Nice.
it was a fun little add-on that I didn't expect to happen.
Absolutely.
And it's all about this the story's villain. It's all about Sasha. They loved her so much.
So the differences of writing a screenplay compared to a novel, do you have a preference? Because it's a screenplay. I mean, I guess both of them, they're kind of formulas a little bit, but I mean, screenplay is definitely a formula, correct?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, with screenwriting, it's really rigid. I mean, you've got so many rules. I mean, rules that you can break, but still it's very strict, and there's an enticing challenge to that. Where, you know, you've got a lot to say, and you're like, okay, I've got to restrict it to these parameters, and it's got to communicate exactly what I want. And so there's a fun and aggravating challenge at that.
Big puzzle.
And of course with novels, yeah, you've got I'm an outliner. I have to outline everything or I'll write myself into a corner every time. But you're still free to kind of just go off on, you know, tangents on things and explore areas you didn't expect. And so there's a freedom to it, but there's also, you can get yourself just completely turned around. So there's definitely challenges with both. I think at heart, I'm a screenwriter guy. Mm-hmm. I just grew up loving movies so much, and the process of the screenplay, I just adore it so much.
Mm. Did you, how did you teach yourself? Are you self-taught? Did you read, you know, watch any videos or read some books on how to do that? Or, you know, where did that come from?
For screenwriting, I kind of like followed what everyone does is I grab the Sid Field screenplay or screenwriting book, you know, the Bible that everyone starts with. And then I read a few more, and then it became mostly self-taught after that. I did some workshops, and I'm always trying to educate myself on that. With a novel, I had written short stories in my, you know, when I was younger, and had even tackled a novel when I was in my early 20s. Oh. That was just awful. So, but, you know, so I consider myself self-taught. I mean, I Googled, you know, what are the rules with novel writing, especially in today's publishing world. Yeah. And I just mostly with it's a format issue. You know, you set up your Word doc a certain way and that's it. So there really isn't a lot on that. It's just a matter of honing the skill, doing it more and more.
That's awesome. Wow. Wow. Now we have a mutual friend, Gina Nemo. Gina is my manager and very talented in a lot of different ways. She's an actress. She was really on 21 Jump Street. Yeah. Way back in the day. And now she's doing a lot of producing as well. And you guys are working on a pilot together.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, how awesome is Gina, right?
I mean, she's the best. I mean,
she is a firecracker, go-getter, like just
big-hearted. Good person.
She's great. Yeah. And, you know, she came to a screenwriter's Facebook group that I'm in, kind of a private one. And she approached the group. It's a small group. And she just said, I'm looking for a science fiction writer to co-write this TV pilot idea I have. And she had worked really hard on her notes because she had consulted with a script consultant in Australia and, wow. and they sent it around to some producers and some people that are well known. And so she kind of honed it to what she wanted. And she had a little kind of some hoops to jump through to kind of find the right person in that group. And I think mm-hmm. she said 20 people applied and she narrowed down to 3. Whoa. And then I ended up getting the job. And it was my first paid screenwriting gig. So I owe her a lot because that was just wonderful to, you know, can say I'm a paid screenwriter.
It
takes things to a whole different level. And, you know, she handed over everything for the pilot. And I sort of hammered it into a storyline, a narrative. And we went back and forth a lot and met once in person, did a lot of Zoom calls. And it's come together now. We finalized it. We had a script consultant look it over. And she's had a couple of studio executives just give their opinion, and it's getting really well, it's being well received.
That's now, did they film the pilot or are they not yet? I thought they
No.
Well,
Gina on her own did
teaser.
She's like a proof of concept, like a 15-minute dealio.
Okay.
And it kind of set the stage. It kind of gave the tone of what she's trying to accomplish. But we need to sell that thing to really dig in and get that pilot going.
Okay. Cause yeah, I thought, yeah. I remember her doing some filming. So yeah, I must've just been, like you said, the proof of concept, and that's awesome. Well, I mean, she's making huge inroads in so many different ways with, you know, her other projects and connections and stuff. And so I have no fears that this will not be picked up one of these days.
And that is the dream, because this show would be a wonderful thing to work on. It is so rich and ready for a lot of seasons.
I love it. Briefly, what kind of shows are you watching these days? There's so much content and so many streaming services. What do you enjoy, and what maybe kind of feeds your inspirations?
I have to say, it's got to be a golden age of television content right now, where there's
totally.
There's so much good stuff to watch. It is impossible to watch everything.
Yep.
I mean, we finished Ted Lasso because that show is literally the show we all needed, I think, at this time, this crazy time. It is so positive without being preachy, and it's hilarious, and you just are so invested in those characters. That is a show I would kill to be a writer on, even though I have no business writing comedy or drama.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, I agree. You know, it's interesting. I like the last couple episodes the best because they started getting a little darker and a little bit added a little more oomph to it. You know what I mean? Correct?
Yeah,
I mean,
a little bit of teeth. And I want to punch Nate in the face.
I think everybody does that. Poor actor. I know he's just hated by everybody.
And he's like the nicest guy. You see him on interviews. So he's like the sweetest guy. He's just So I'm also big fan. I was a big fan of Squid Game.
Okay.
That kind of came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. I didn't really expect much. And I got into it. I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. in fact, I watched it twice through, once in the subtitles and then the next time with my family who wanted dubbed in English. like, all right. But it really didn't take away from it. I thought it would ruin it, but it didn't take away at all.
Good.
Then, of course, you know, most of the stuff I'm watching is definitely on streaming services stuff. There's a few network things I get into. Surprisingly, I love a good comedy, even though I don't write that at all. But you know, I'm a fan of the Goldbergs. You know, anything that's kind of a geeky atmosphere to it.
Mm-hmm. The new Wonder Years is really good. Have you seen that?
I have not seen that yet. I'm
it's
very curious.
Wonderful.
I hear it is. So that's definitely on my list to check out. And I have Hulu, so I'll be able to watch. I'll be able to binge what they've done so far.
Yep. Good.
What was I going to say? There was something else that I was watching too. Oh, that new show, Home Economics with Topher Grace.
Okay. Yeah, I've not seen that.
It's actually really good. At first, I was like, okay, this is going to be either really bad or medium, but it turned out to be turns out to be excellent. I was pleasantly surprised.
Okay, good. I'll check it out.
And of course, looking forward to Stranger Things and, you know, all the deeper, darker stuff that streaming services offer. I love all that.
Yep. Well, I mean, they can do so much more than the networks can. And it's really hard to even watch any network stuff anymore, you know, other than like, yeah, you know, something that's, I don't know. Yeah.
I honestly can't think of a single drama from the networks that I watch because it's network.
Yeah.
And there's still top quality stuff there, but I just feel like that they're hamstrung. They're limited.
I was thinking the exact same word. Yeah. They're hamstrung.
Yeah. Mm. What are you watching?
Cool. Oh gosh. I watched Lasso, the morning show. I've enjoyed on Apple TV as well. I like a little bit of everything. I actually just kind of started to deep dive back into Justified, which I'd never seen before. That show with Timothy Oliphant.
Oh yeah.
He's Oliphant great. The best. He is. I mean, he plays basically, you know, he was the sheriff in Deadwood and he was amazing. And he's now it's kind of more modern day and he's kind of the same kind of character. And he's just great at that role. And Walton Goggins is in that and he's one of my favorite actors.
Oh, that dude. Even his comedy that he's got the
Bronco one. Did you see that?
That one, but the one where he's the widower. He's got two kids and
I did not see that.
It's called The Unicorn.
Okay, I've not seen that, but The Righteous Gemstones. Have you seen him in that baby?
Yes, that was hilarious. Yeah. That was, but you know, the unicorn is, because I'm used to seeing him as a creepy villain kind of dude, and this he's like a loving father, best friend kind of dude, and it's like different for him.
All right, I will check that out. No, he's one of my favorites. He's
Great character actor.
Yep. Yeah. Just so much stuff. And Fargo. I just got done watching all four seasons of Fargo on it.
I need to check that one out because I know it changes every season.
It does. It's wonderful. It's wonderful writing and acting. It's
brilliant. I heard the Chris Rock season was pretty damn good.
That was my favorite. He killed
it. That's awesome. Yeah, Chris Rock has got some chops.
Yep. It was wonderful. So we'll take a little side trip here over to I want to talk briefly about marketing because I know a lot of people it's kind of the tough part of being a creative, you know, book marketing and process, you know, shopping and TV pilot, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about what your experience has been and what has worked for you. We'll start with the books.
Sure. You know, it came to a point where I'd say most authors really hate the business side of it. They just want to write and they don't want to sell themselves or to sell their books. And I understand that because as a creative, you really just don't want to get into all that. You'd rather just, you know, maybe interact, engage with the audience and discuss books and your books and their books and everything like that. But I'm still in the position of trying to quote unquote make it or break in. And so I'm up and coming. And I had to really just look myself in the mirror and just say, do you want to make a career out of this? And if I had to be honest with myself. And if I did, I needed to get over it and just start being okay with marketing myself and marketing the books and just be sort of fake it till you make it. I hate that term, but you know, it's kind of like, if I'm not feeling confident, I have to exude that confidence. And eventually it just started happening. And I started off kind of throwing everything at the wall, you know, seeing what would stick. Facebook ads, Twitter ads, Instagram ads, Amazon ads, in-person signings. Mm-hmm. I would do swag material like postcards and bookmarks. And one trick that I really love that I did that I'm sharing with every author I can is, you know, those little QR codes that businesses have. You can create your own for free, and you can have it when a person holds their phone up to it, their camera phone, it'll link to whatever site you want it to link to. So I put a QR code for my books on every single printed material I created. So it gets anybody
in the book as well as like a bookmark and stuff like that.
Like the products I would hand out to people, like if it's a postcard or a bookmark, it would have or even my business cards, second round I did, they have the QR code. So if you are curious or someone says, hey, where'd you get that? Someone can say, hey, scan this. And that tip has really gone a long way.
And so you have it lined up to go to your Amazon page to sell the book? Okay.
Uh-huh. Exactly. And when I was between books, I would have it linked to my author website, because that was kind of like a hub where they can find all the social media and all the links to everything there.
Oh, so you can keep changing where the destination is.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Not on the same one. I'd have to print new ones. But I mean, for online stuff, you can change it on the fly and just put up a new QR code. Like the ads I'm running right now, the image I'm using, it does have a QR code. And I just last week linked it to the Amazon page for the third book. And it's a great thing, because if people don't want to type out a long URL anymore, you just scan that little square and it takes you right to it.
Thank you. And that's a great idea. You know, what I always did whenever I had a book come out was get a domain for it and kind of make it a shortened version of my book. So I didn't have that whole long thing. Like a couple of my kids' books, one was Lucy and Chester, the other was Steve the Alien. And then for my Habits book, it's a little longer, but it's Habits for Success. Well, shit, what was it? Habitsforsuccessbook.com or something like that. But it was just a little shorter. But I mean, the QR code's even better than that. That's a great tip. Thanks.
Yeah, use it, because you'll find it is super helpful. I mean, people are really happy with it.
And we'll keep going.
So let's see. I started fumbling with all that and doing in-person events and the live like book conventions or festivals or book signings. They're hit and miss. I really had to learn to be really careful about which ones I chose to do. Mm-hmm. For example, I did the San Diego Book Fest, which is, you know, fairly large. It's not like the LA one with 10,000 booths, but it was big. So I got down there, I paid a couple hundred bucks for one day, and I was like, well, okay, I better sell a lot of books. And I felt that the placement of their authors was not mapped out really well. Mm-hmm. I thought, and they might have changed since then, but at this time, this was 2018, they sort of randomly sprinkled you wherever. So people were walking around looking for, you know, whatever genre they want. Like, oh, where's my children's book? Where's my sci-fi category?
They should put you all together, I would imagine.
Yeah, they should have lumped us all in one place, like all the sci-fi people here and all the horror people here. They didn't, though. So I was next to a self-help person and a sort of a historical drama person. Great people. We had great time chatting because there were no customers.
I've been to a few of those myself, my friend.
Yeah. So I think the whole day I sold like 8 books, and I was like, ah. Yeah. But then a weekend later, I was I'm connected to a homeschool industry kind of thing, and they're having their annual expo, and they say, hey, we're having this entrepreneurial booth, you know, this event for 2 hours. Why don't you come on down? So I said, sure, it was free. And I sold more books there into 2 hours than I did the whole day of the San Diego thing. So it's just, you never know. You just never know.
Nope. Yep. Amen. What are some things? Oh, go ahead. Yeah, please.
Oh, just to finish up the thought, I said the best, or at least the most fun thing to do and most engaging, is definitely if you can do an in-store book signing. I'm sure you've done those, and it is just a blast.
I've done more than a few, and though I found those were hit and miss too. And sometimes they're very humbling, and you're just sitting there like you feel like you're in the middle of an island and, you know, Nowheresville, and you just like, feel like you're in a fishbowl. Everybody's like, oh, this poor guy is just sitting here. Nobody's buying his book. It must be, you know, and he's just like, ugh.
I have seen that.
I've been there.
I think I've been lucky as I sort of gamed. I kind of gamed the system. I did signings that were local enough that I could have people come by. Say, hey friends in the area, come on over. And you know,
please,
luckily some would.
Oh, that helps. That's good. I mean, I'm making some jokes about what, but I mean, it's, yeah, I have stories.
I'm sure
successful,
you do.
Successful ones and that sort of stuff. But you know, what are some things that you wouldn't do again that you tried?
I would definitely say, okay, for me, now this is not all authors. Some people have success with these, but Twitter ads, I don't even know if they do Twitter ads anymore, but Twitter ads were a complete dog for me. I didn't get any traction at all. Facebook ads are hit and miss. Like the one I'm doing this week is actually gaining some traction, but I would say 30% of the time it's been good. But yeah, I keep coming back for more, like more punishment.
Okay. I guess, obviously you're making a little bit of money off more book sales. I mean, so.
Amazon ads are fantastic, but it's really kind of for me, it's above my pay grade on your keywords and, and you know, all the categories, there's a lot of moving parts, and I just never learned it very well. Luckily, my new publisher takes care of it all for me, so I don't have to worry about it.
Sweet.
But what else wouldn't I do again? There's a few printed things, you know, that people just don't care about, and they're costly. I thought magnets would be a fantastic little thing to give away, and nobody really cared. So there's a few, you know, you just hit and miss. I would definitely say avoid a lot of the social media advertising. Twitter was a dog.
Okay.
Facebook is hit and miss, and Instagram is okay.
Okay. All right. No, that's good. I appreciate you sharing that. So let's talk about the process of shopping a TV pilot. I've not tried that, and I'm not really sure what it seems like. It'd be a scary thing. I don't know why I feel like it'd be a scary thing, but
it is.
Okay.
Well, you know, a lot of it is because it's kind of an unknown, for me, it's unknown territory. I mean, I've been before when I was screenwriting and trying to shop Metcraft and a couple other scripts as films, there was sort of this, you know, oh, you get it. You try and find an agent. Oh, how do you do that? Well, you win contests or you go to networking events and you pitch. And so it's kind of like this, you know, this sort of well known factors. And a lot of it is who you know and right place, right time kind of stuff.
Yeah.
With a TV pilot and pre or post or during COVID, it's kind of a weird experience. We can't go to events. We can't. And contests, since the pilot was finished around July, it's been difficult because any contest we enter won't have their results until next year. Contests take forever to, you know, announce winners and such. And we're trying to shop it right now. So we really haven't dived in there. What we've been doing is looking at production companies that we think would align with or seek out science fiction stories that we're doing.
Okay.
And then we're trying to connect with whoever manages that person or who the front person is at that production company kind of thing. And we're both utilizing our contacts to say, okay, you know, we need a representation to get in the door with a lot of these places we want to go. So we're kind of in the process now of landing representation. And because that's really at the end of the day, no matter what we do, that's going to be the end all be all is getting a manager who will then say, I love this, I'm going to sign you guys, and I'm going to give this to every proper production company I know.
Yeah.
And because it's a struggle when you don't have that representation, for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's happening. I mean, you know, I think you guys will do it. I mean, you're obviously good, very talented, and you know, you're
A
good product. Yeah, got a good product, and people, they need content. So I mean, somebody out there is getting their stuff made, right? And so there's no reason why.
Yeah, you know. I mean, honestly, I'm confident it will get sold. I mean, Gina and I both share this sort of perseverance.
Yes.
Yeah, we will not stop. We just keep going, and you know, when one door closes, we break open the next window. Just we're not going to ever stop.
Yeah. Steve Martin, I don't know the exact quote, but he said something along the lines, just keep doing good work and they will find you. And, and that always kind of makes me feel a little bit better.
That resonates.
Yeah. Yeah.
You hone your performance as an actor. He just keeps honing his comedy and honing his acting, and these great things came to him. I mean, he worked hard to get them, but if he hadn't honed his skills, they would have turned him down.
Yeah.
So there's so much to say that. Oh, speaking of, circling back to the TV shows, we just finished Martin Short's show. Only Murders in the Building.
Is it good? I saw it.
It's fantastic.
Okay.
It is so well executed, and it's a fun mystery, and it really kept you guessing. And of course, Steve Martin and Martin Short together, and Selena Gomez ended up being this wonderful surprise. I wasn't no sure what to expect from her, and she was fantastic.
That's great. Did she kind of play, quote, the straight man in the show?
In a way, she was. She was like almost like the brains of the operation, even though the other two are much older and wiser. They each had their quirkiness, and she sort of was like rolling her eyes a lot at them, and coming up with the brainstorm ideas. And
I love it.
I highly recommend it. It's a good show.
Okay, no, I'll check that out. Thanks. I saw it advertised.
Ah. So swing back around. Yeah. So I think the perseverance is key to whatever endeavor you're trying to market. If you TV shows, films, books.
Acting,
we just have to keep going. Yeah, anything create. If you're creative, I think perseverance. What my favorite quote is for myself is two things: hope and perseverance. Mm-hmm. I never give up. I never give up hope, and I persevere even when I don't feel like it anymore.
Hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I can tell. Yeah. Well, so what advice do you have? I mean, obviously, actually, what you just kind of said kind of is a potential answer for what I'm about to ask you. But what advice do you have for creatives kind of to keep advancing their art and their career, other than hope and perseverance?
Right. I mean, those are the big factors. Another factor is surround yourself with positive people that are going to tell you, maybe review your work or appreciate you, and will also tell you straight, like if something's not working in a story, and they'll be honest with you about it, mm-hmm. and maybe even offer ways it can improve. I feel like no one gets to where they are alone. And if you can surround yourself with positive, like-minded and helpful people, it really goes a long way, at least even on just your internal feelings about where you are.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. It's so easy to, maybe I'm speaking for myself. It's so easy to kind of get down on ourselves and just maybe kind of have a couple of no's hit us the wrong way at the wrong time, and it just like I want to throw the towel in.
Yes.
Even though somebody might be incredibly talented or have a lot, just a lot of good things going for them, but it's not easy to kind of keep wiping the dirt off your knees or whatever, and just exactly. Getting up and get bracing for another no.
And that's it, because we all are, as creatives, whatever it is we do, you're putting yourself into that work, and so when it gets rejected, it definitely stings. It's like, hey, ouch, you just don't, and then you kind of, we are always our own worst critics, and so you can easily slump into even a depression about it. It's like, I'm just done. I'm done with this. But if you've got people around you that can kind of pull you back from the ledge, it's very helpful.
Yeah. And go through that process together. Right. And kind of keep picking each other up.
Exactly. They can relate, they've all had rejections. And so you just, we've all developed by the time you get a few projects going, you've developed a pretty thick skin, but things can still get through.
Oh my gosh. Well, when I first got to LA in 2013, I was pretty much a greenhorn to acting, but I won't go into my acting story, but I started taking classes, and that was kind of really scary because I'm with some people that I recognize from other stuff, and I'm just starting out, and it's like, had to really dig in, and just kind of like that first year was tough because I had to kind of go through all the mistakes and insecurities that maybe someone might have gone through in high school in art, in theater, or in college in theater. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, but, and being intimidated and being in the room with those people.
Totally. And it got easier, and I started booking stuff, and that was nice. But I think for the most of the time that I was there, I was still kind of working on finding the self-acceptance for myself. And so I would put a lot of pressure on myself when I went to auditions, instead of just, and being in my head, instead of just like, you have to have a really, a just let it go attitude. And if it happens, it happens. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And the win is just being asked to audition. And if you're not, I really couldn't quite get to that place. And I know I'm there now. Yeah. Because I've kind of, you know, grown in a different, you know, grown out of that portion of me that kind of held me back. But it's tough if you can't get to that place. You know, you put too much on each little thing, and it's just, you can't do anything when you're in your head.
Well, what you did took a lot of guts. I mean, coming in, like you said, really green. Going in there, and all of a sudden you look around, there's people who you've seen on film and TV with you in that room. You're like, oh, geez. So, I mean, that took some serious guts. So you need to give yourself some praise for that too.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And it's funny. I mean, in some people, it's the opposite. I always was nervous in class having to perform in front of other people. Cause you know, in some ways you feel like you're being judged, but when the film was rolling on sets and stuff, I was fearless. It was the opposite for me, where maybe some people it would be, you know, they felt more comfortable in class. I don't know. It was,
I can see it though, because I think there's a certain shift in the mindset. Once you've got the job,
yeah,
then it becomes, you're going to work instead of I'm being judged for my, you know, I can see how your mindset was. It's different once you got the job.
Yeah. And I don't know why the difference, like acting is great because it can be very cathartic. And like when I was on set and even doing my own stuff, I just felt I was given permission just to kind of let all this crap out that maybe had been stored up, and you know what I mean, subconsciously or what have you. But in class, even though I was kind of still being given permission to do it, I was a little more fearful of letting it out because maybe, I don't know, it's because there was actual people in the room. I don't know. I should think that's an interesting little aside, but I digress.
That needs some self-analysis.
We need a therapist here with us. So
there you go.
All right. I want to dive into, I'm fascinated that you're a paranormal investigator. Tell me briefly about that and what you, how you kind of scratch that itch.
Well, okay, that's interesting because I don't know what it is. My whole life, I guess ever since Night of the Living Dead and being involved in horror, but I've always been sort of fascinated with an afterlife. And I used to be religious sort of, but as I grew out of that, I still was fascinated with what comes after, if anything, maybe nothing. And so I would watch these, you know, way back in like late 90s, early 2000s, there was a couple of early ghost shows, I guess ghost hunting shows, and I was like, I've always wanted to do that. I didn't know that was a thing you could do. And so my wife and I were really into those shows, and you know, some of the ones that came along after were kind of over the top and ridiculous as far as seeing what they would come across, some stuff that was, oh, this is evil, or oh, this is demonic, or oh, I'm possessed. It's like, stop. Yeah. it's nonsense. But the earlier ones, like the actual original ghost hunters, were very pragmatic, and they would use skepticism and debunking, and they would just, and sometimes they would have a whole episode and not catch anything, and they were just honest about it. Well, mm-hmm. We didn't find anything. So we kind of had this approach to it. And then we started learning that we could do that ourselves with just a little bit, you know, just a recorder and some simple stuff. And we went out on a few, and my wife and I just got completely hooked. And wow. 12 years later, here we are still doing it. And it's, you know, it's a hobby. It's just a fun thing to do. And we look at it as, we go in as skeptics. You know, when something potentially supernatural happens and we document it, we look for ways to debunk it. And if a lot of times we'll find a logical explanation. Oh, look, there's a breeze going here. That made the door move, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of stuff. But when we do capture something on camera or on audio that we cannot debunk, that we just cannot explain it away, then we kind of get excited because, oh, maybe that was something paranormal. I don't know. So we kind of take that angle with it.
That sounds like cool.
And we're with a newer group that we just sort of hooked up with that have the same philosophy. So it's nice.
That's great. How often do you get together?
With during COVID, like this last weekend was the first time we did it in probably a year and a half, 2 years. But we were in our prime doing it maybe four or five times a year, not a lot. But now with this new group, I think we're going to be doing it a lot because now we've got the one we did last weekend and we got two more coming up already before the end of the year. So we're going to be much more into it.
Well, that's awesome. You know, I it's a little ways away. It's like, you know, but you, if you've never been to Virginia City, you need to go visit there. It's about 20 miles outside of Reno, and I lived in Reno for 4 years and went there almost every weekend. And it's a National Historic District, and it's just like one of the most haunted places anywhere that I'm told. And there's like a 7-acre cemetery. It's just fascinating. You ought to Google it sometime, and just you would have a few, you could spend a week there.
I'm making a note. I'm going to check it out. We did last weekend. We investigated the sort of infamous Star of India ship that's docked in San Diego Harbor. Oh. It's an old ship from the 1860s, and they've had a lot of accidental deaths and deaths from illness and that kind of thing, and murder and suicide. It's got a lot going on. But the cool thing about that ship is it does not feel negative or creepy, or doesn't give you that awful feeling some places do. And so it feels like if there are spirits there, it feels like they're content just to sort of chill out there. So we love going there to investigate because you can go there and they give you the complete run of the ship. There's nobody else with you. Wow. And there's just four of us. And we had the ship is four levels and we just went at it. It was fantastic. even just the historical aspects of it, just being on that vessel is incredible.
Mm. I bet. Wow. Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's awesome. So as we're about wrapping things up here, I want you to briefly share with me. We both shared a kind of a tough experience in our lives with cancer, and
yes,
I think, you know, for both of us, it probably turned into, there was a bit of a blessing in disguise aspect to it. If you don't mind, you know, tell me a little bit about what happened with you.
Absolutely, yeah, it was a tough thing. So when I was 26 years old, my son was 2 months old and I got diagnosed with testicular cancer. And I'm 26. I'm, you know, still a kid. My wife and I were very young. And when the doctor dropped the C word on us, we both fell to the floor practically. I couldn't believe, I mean, I'm so young. Why am I getting this? And, it sent a lot of panic through us. You know, we didn't know anything about it. And, just hearing that, you know, and my son 2 months old, I had this horrible flashes of, you know, am I going to miss out on his, you know, I'm not going to be there for him.
Yeah.
Luckily, you know, the doctors were able to, you know, calmed us down. They said, look, this is actually one of the most curable cancers there is. And said, they don't know how people get it. They don't know if it's hereditary or if it's an accident or anything. Mm-hmm. They just don't know. But they said they are able to cure it like 95% of the time. So I was, you know, pleased with that news, but still they were very concerned. So they literally got me on the operating table 4 days later. I didn't have to wait for anything.
Wow.
And the surgery went well, it was easy. They said, you know, you're not going to have any problem. You could still have more kids later on, after, you know, once the radiation's out of you, cause I had to do radiation afterwards. So everything was going to be normal, but, I had to wait till I was fully healed. And then they sent me to a month of radiation treatments. And because they radiated from like my chest down to my thigh, just all that area to kill off the lymph nodes, it would make me really, really ill. And at the time, the only place that this network had was in Hollywood. The only facility was, and I'm in Anaheim going to Hollywood in the 90s, was a, you know, good 45 minutes to an hour drive. So we'd drive up in the morning, I'd get zapped, start feeling sick. My wife would drive us home and we'd get home pretty much just in time for me to start throwing up for the rest of the day.
Oh man.
And as I'd spend the day throwing up and then start feeling a little better in the evening, feeling normal by the morning, and then have to go back up to Hollywood to do it all over again. Anyway, so we did that for a month.
Brutal.
Yeah, it was really hard. The silver lining though, was I was off work a total of 3 months. And I got to have all that bonding time with my son. It was like kind of like that paternity leave kind of thing they're trying to get going now. But I had it, and it was this incredible experience. And I was really, actually really sad to have to go back to work, because it was so, you know, close and bonding with my son. And you know, we still have a close bond today. He's 27 now.
And I have a 27-year-old son too.
Oh, wow. Yeah. We have all these similarities.
I know.
But yeah, it makes you think. I'm sure you know the same thing. It makes you really go, wow, okay, what am I doing with my life? I really have things to do and things to say before it's my time. And this cancer scare, you know, had me thinking, is it my time? So it really kind of kicked me in the butt to get going on the things I wanted to do in life.
Yeah.
And that's when I really started getting deeper into writing and taking it more seriously.
Wow. Sorry that it happened, but I'm glad that it kind of inspired you as well.
It did. Kind of a backup inspiration. I ended up getting skin cancer a few years later after that. So I was like, really? Cancer again? This one, you were able to carve it out. And it was basal cell, which is like a lighter form, which is not, it's not going to be like the other kind that spreads all over.
Mm-hmm.
So they got it. But unfortunately, on my left nostril side, they had to take such a huge area. There was like this dime sized open hole, not all the way through to my nostril, but like just a big open wound. And I was like, this is really bad. And they're like, well, no, we're going to do reconstructive surgery on you. They had a plastic surgeon come in, and he did a miracle, because when you look at my nose now, you literally cannot tell that any surgery was done there, except my left nostril is slightly smaller opening than the right nostril. Other than that, you cannot tell. It's incredible.
That is incredible.
So I've been skin cancer free ever since. So whoo, knock wood.
Good. Oh, that's awesome.
But yeah, we share that. So,
well, you know, for me, it came in such a later time in my life, but I think it just gave me permission to say no to stuff I didn't really want to do. And which was nice.
It was that's very healthy.
Yes. Cause I'm a bit of a people pleaser, and I'm much better now, but you know, there's something to learn, I suppose, with everything that we go through, and you know,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And you survived. I survived. Yep. We're still here, and you know, there's a lot of life left to live.
Yes, there is. But it goes fast. And so that's why we got to enjoy it and connect with the others and love our family and friends and just keep doing what you enjoy.
Absolutely.
So I was going to ask you what's next. I mean, I kind of know what's next. The third book is coming out in 2 days.
Yes.
Now this won't be this will be out after it's come out, but so that's exciting.
Yeah.
And I wish you well for that.
Thank you. And the publisher, my publisher is Black Rose Writing out of Texas, and they must really like the books, because when that one was kind of getting finalized, he asked, okay, do you have more coming?
Oh.
And I was like, well, I was funny part is, at first I was like, no, I really just wanted to write those 3 books, and now I'm going to go back to screenplays. But then, because he said he wanted to publish more, I'm like, well, okay, now maybe. So now I've outlined books 4, 5, and 6.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
I didn't want to, but here I am. And I really like the direction. I really like it now. So now I'm like, oh shit, now I got to write it.
Well, congratulations, I think. No, I'm kidding. You know what I mean?
No, it's one of those happy accidents.
Absolutely.
But I'm also co-writing a zombie apocalypse screenplay with my son. He and I sort of banged out these ideas, because I always said I wanted to write a zombie apocalypse movie, but not until I had something original, because I love the zombie genre, but a lot of them still feel very similar, and you know, they're in the way they're done, the way they're told. And I told myself I'd never write one unless I could bring something new. And one day, my son and I, over some beers, were chatting about it, and we both came up with this amazing idea. And so I started writing it, and I said, well, why don't you write it with me? And so now we're working on it together.
How cool is that?
Yeah, it's really awesome.
Does it have a title?
It does, but I can't say just yet, because the title gives. the title gives something away and I don't want to give it away.
Please don't. No. Okay. We'll get you on again later.
Oh, absolutely.
So other than that, plus Finch and Skull potentially, and I'm sure you have some other ideas brewing.
Yes. Always something in the works, and you know, never a dull moment when it comes to the writing.
Well, that's awesome. You're prolific. I mean, just like Stephen King.
The funny thing is, I used to not be. I used to not be very prolific at all, and suddenly I sort of accidentally find myself being far more prolific than I used to be.
Well, that's awesome.
I'm not complaining.
It's usually the other way around,
right?
Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure chatting with you and getting to know you more, Brian.
Has been a wonderful experience.
Thank you. And I'm going to put your social media handles in the show notes, but folks that are listening, you can visit his website, which is great. I've been there. It's brianfitzpatrickbooks.com. And it's just like it sounds, brianfitzpatrickbooks.com. So go check it out and check out his MechCraft trilogy. And I wish you well, my friend. And I look forward to saying hi in person one of these days.
Yeah, as I say, when you get out to California, let's meet up.
I would love that.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was really awesome.
Thank you for listening to The Creative Spark. To learn more about host G. Brian Benson, his latest best-selling book, Habits for Success, and this week's amazing guest, please visit the show notes. And we love building community, making new friends, and spreading the goodness. So don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends and family. Until next time, as Brian always says, be well, be creative, and always be yourself.